Hello and welcome back to Enterprise Linux Security. I'm here as always with my friend Zhao, and we're going to talk about cleaning, but not the kind of cleaning that you do in your house, although a company that we're going to talk about does have something to do with that. Threat actors are cleaning house. I guess the puns are just going to keep coming in this episode. I kind of figured it would happen. How you doing, Zhao?
All good, as always, a pleasure. Congrats on a million. Still hadn't had the chance to congratulate you live here, and yeah. Great milestone there for you.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. Yeah, a million subscribers. When I first started, I didn't even know that there was a million, Linux users. Obviously, nowadays, Linux users are everywhere and Linux is everywhere. But when I started, it was like, you look at a job board, if you're looking for a job, and you'll find like 10 Windows system administrator positions for any one Linux admin position. And then later on, that flipped, and I was like, wow, I made the right choice. And then nowadays, you could search for the word Linux in a job board and find like a ton of stuff. So it's extremely relevant, and the numbers show that. So it's just been an amazing ride. It's been a long time. I've been more prominent more lately than when I started. I had a small base at the beginning, but then just pushing it and, working uphill, it finally paid off. And I'm not sure if I'm going to really put my sights on 10 million, which is the next award. That I don't know about that. That's a really, really big number, and it took this long to hit 1 million. But, you never know. I mean, I didn't think I'd hit a million, and I did, so I guess we'll see what happens. So anyway, before we get started and talk about cleaning house, sorry. if you want to support the channel, check out merch.learnlinux.tv, buy yourself something nice. There's shirts, there's all kinds of swag, stickers, cups, you name it. Linux and Linux adjacent stuff can be found at the shop. Again, merch.learnlinux.tv. So with that said, how about we get started and talk about Clorox, of all companies?
Yeah, the jokes here are just too many to actually go through them. So Clorox had an issue, a very expensive issue. So they're filing a lawsuit against the IT services giant Cognizant, alleging that Cognizant's help desk personnel, which Clorox is hiring, literally handed out employee passwords to hackers posing as employees. So the hackers would ring them up, say, oh, I'm Bob from accounting, I really need to change my password. And the help desk person on the other end would just say, sure, what do you want it to be? And they would set that password. This wasn't sophisticated, this wasn't a vulnerability, this wasn't some crazy hack in the works for years at the time. They simply rang the help desk company.
Yeah, this just goes back to something we bring up again and again on the podcast. And, for those that are new to either this podcast or security in general, when it comes to threat actors, they're not going to do any more work than they have to. If the only way into a system is by, using a vulnerability that's been unpatched or something, they could utilize that. And they do that all the time. But if all they have to do is, basically call in and get a password or use some sort of phishing attempt. I mean, if that the shortest path of least entrance is exactly what they're going to do. And the nature of IT secure, or actually just IT in general, is that often teams are spread way too thin. And I think a lot of people know what I'm talking about. You're working long weekends, you're doing this, you're doing that. And then eventually it comes around a discussion, why don't we hire a third party vendor to help us with X, Y, or Z? That'll take some of the pressure off the team. Then you guys can, work more on the projects you're actually wanting to work on, and we can take some of the workload off. And a lot of times, especially with management, that's seen as kind of like shifting the responsibility to someone else. And it's easy to think that just because, if you're using what you think at least is a reputable company to manage some of your burden for you, that they're just going to do the right thing. But that's not always the case. And even though you might be going through to a third party, and Cognizant is a third party in this case that Clorox was utilizing, they were just giving passwords away, which is very, very interesting. And it really kind of underscores, as we'll talk more about policies, because it's what, I mean, obviously, I'm sure most of you, at least I hope, have policies at your company that govern how you're supposed to do various things, verification that you need to do to make sure the caller, email, or whoever it is who they say they are. But assumptions in IT are always bad, in my opinion. Always. Like, and obviously you assume you know the problem and you think you know what a problem is and then you go to fix it. But in this case, you know, you have a third party vendor that isn't following best practices. And I think that's a very common issue. But at this point, we have Clorox, which is a huge company. And in this case, Cognizant, I want to be clear, they're denying this. I should have said this at the beginning. You know, just need to say that from a reporting standpoint, they're going on record to say that, you know, this isn't the case and they're going to fight this vigorously. But Clorox is alleging that they didn't follow common sense, apparently.
So a bit more context on this. So the breach occurred in August 2023, and it apparently caused massive disruption to Clorox operations for a few weeks, with some systems taking months to be brought back online, which is typical in this type of situations. So the idea was that they got the password, they got into the systems, and they deployed ransomware. That's essentially the whole strategy behind the attack. This in turn resulted in Clorox reporting a staggering $356 million impact on earnings directly tied to this outage. So this was massive. It's not just pocket change. I mean, for them, I don't know if it is or not, but this was a massive amount. And according to the lawsuit, this wasn't a one-time mistake, but there were multiple instances where help desk agents failed to follow basic security protocols. Like you mentioned, so they didn't verify caller identity, they didn't escalate the requests, they didn't log these critical password actions. And those are all things that should be standardized. And every company has their own plan, but there are some basic steps that everybody should follow. Password changes, password requests, you should always authenticate the other end. Now, there are many ways that it's more difficult to do that over the phone these days than it was 5 years ago. But still, just willy-nilly going and changing passwords like this, this is not really something to be done.
No. And getting back to policy, you know, like I mentioned earlier, at your company, hopefully you have policies that govern not only how you fix things, how you troubleshoot things, what you do in a disaster, but also, you know, if someone, you know, security best practices or common sense and training is basically verifying the person on the other end. And making sure that the vendor that you're thinking about going with to help you out with your workload is going to also have those policies. In some cases, and I'm not saying Clorox did or didn't do this, but in some cases, it's like passing the ball to someone else. It's like, we need help with these things. Let's let them deal with it. They'll deal with it. We don't have the burden anymore. We're not going to think about it. We're just going to go about our day. In actuality, just like you should be auditing your policies at your organization, you should also interview the company that you're going with that they follow the same policies. And that's very important. And keep in mind that this type of thing is only going to get worse. I mean, it's pretty bad right now. But when we think about AI and voice cloning, it's very easy nowadays for someone to recreate, you know, like a stakeholder's voice or the CEO's voice on the other end of the phone. And if you think about it, you know, there's going to be various people within your company likely doing marketing or doing presentations or just, you know, being on the road talking about the company's mm-hmm. products. And, you know, there's obviously that's a good thing. You should be doing that. But at the same time, you know, that's being recorded. That's on YouTube or wherever else. So voice clips are not hard to come by to train AI agents. So we really do need to think about our policies here and just make sure that there's added protections because, you know, like I mentioned earlier, shortest path of least entrance is what threat actors are going to do. If they don't, they're not going to spend 4 hours trying to, you know, do some kind of attack through a vulnerability if all they have to do is call the receptionist for the password. And again, I'm being general here. I'm not saying it was a receptionist that did it, obviously not. But in a lot of cases, it's someone that is not on the IT side that just says, oh yeah, I'll help you out. But having a, you know, help desk vendor, I think that's even more insult to injury by far.
What you were saying about voice recordings, you don't even need very long clips to get accurate recordings and accurate voice cloning. Right now, you can do that with less than 10 seconds of voice recording. As long as you get the other person saying a few different words, it's easy to train a model and then having it create longer sentences from that. So it can say whatever you want, essentially. And every company CEO has a presentation on YouTube or somewhere else that's easily accessible, and doing the research and finding that is actually very easy. So it's really, really easy to get that. And it's also relevant to point out something else that touches on what you were saying. Outsourced services, and this is from experience, they don't have the same level of investment into your company that the in-house people do. So you're paying for the service, and you'll usually bargain the price as low as possible. And as they say, you get exactly what you pay for, no more. So this particular service has a problem that the bare minimum doesn't really cover 100% of the problems. So they're not going to put, I'm in no way implying the bright and bestest. That's not something that's accurate. But they're really not going to put the effort into it. They're going to essentially say that, okay, we're going to give you support for 99.9% of all the calls that come in, and we promise to support them and give you a fair resolution on all the issues that come in. But the remainder, well, it might just fall through the cracks. It might not just get the same level of attention. And I'm not saying that's what happened in this case. I'm saying that it's not unexpected for an outsourced service to not comply 100% with what you have defined or what you're expecting it to do. You're paying for the service, they'll give you just enough to fulfill the contract and no more than that. So sometimes situations like these might not get the attention that it deserves. And it's probably why Clorox is claiming that this happened multiple times, allegedly, according to the lawsuit that they filed. I wouldn't be surprised if it happened more than just this one time. But again, it's something that you have to account for when you're outsourcing services. It's not as if it was an in-house service. In no way it's going to be similar.
Right. Yeah, no, exactly. And obviously, I'm not a lawyer and I don't work in the legal field. This isn't Learn Law TV, obviously. But, you know, if this sets a legal precedent, if it's found that Cognizant was negligent, that rhymes strangely enough, and if they get into trouble, obviously, again, I don't know how it's going to play out. But if it does, this could set a legal precedent, which in the sense that other, you know, vendors might say, oh, well, that happened to Cognizant where the employees are giving away passwords. Maybe our company, our vendor should, you know, just make sure that our people are following policies. But at the same time, you know, threat actors are going to do what works. You know, obviously, if they get in via certain means, they're going to keep trying it because it's proven to be effective. Just like, you know, when it comes to ransomware, a company pays it, then they're going to keep doing it because it worked once. Maybe it'll work again. But with the legal precedent, maybe that's the wrong choice of words, but it's just basically setting the example that vendors do need to be more accountable. But the other side of this, too, is often help desk vendors are also overworked. It's not just, you know, sysadmins that listen to this. You might have sales that just need to make that metric. They need a certain number of accounts to sign up for the services. And next thing you know, the people that work at the vendor are working really hard and trying to get off the current call, more to your point, to get onto the next one. And when they're in a hurry to get to the next person and they have like 100 tickets that they have to get through before the end of the day, then human error does go up. So we do need to verify these things. And, you know, there's probably all kinds of ways to do it, but it's just really knowing what their policies are. And again, maybe Clorox did know the policies and maybe there were policies that weren't being followed. It needs to be investigated. But at the end of the day, we have to be responsible when we outsource things to other companies and know that we're in good hands. And if we choose the wrong vendor or someone at that vendor makes a mistake, that can cost, in this case, over, what was it, $350 million? That's insane.
$356 million, which is staggering. And it's not really just about the security aspect of this either. One of the things that we're seeing right now is lots of layoffs on the IT industry. Lots of big companies are laying off thousands of people, thousands of very good people that work there. They're expecting AI to fulfill the role, and they're expecting AI to cover for some of the work that is no longer being done by a human. But it might happen that AI will take longer than expected to reach the level where they're competent at doing that. So in the meantime, those very large companies that are now laying off people might have to resort to outsourcing services to cover for what they're not able to do with AI yet. So we might see more companies falling into something like this, where they're outsourcing a service because they're not able to do it in-house for many reasons, the layoffs being one, and they're going to be on a position where the company that they're outsourcing to might not be able to fulfill exactly what they're expecting, and you're going to see a quality drop across multiple industries and across multiple products, and I wouldn't be surprised if something like this happened more, even if it's not just security.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I've been using AI quite a bit lately for just, you know, sometimes it's easier to look up commands or, you know, syntax for Ansible or something if I'm doing that. And I've mentioned this before on the podcast, but regularly I run across mistakes. And the, you know, result that I come to is that AI is great, but using it everywhere is premature. It's not ready yet. It's like, you know, trying to use a file system that just came out and then trusting all of your data with it. In the enterprise, things need to age for a while and prove themselves. And it's interesting to me that AI is so rampant. And one example I'll give that happened recently is I forgot what it was, but I forgot how to do something in Ansible. So I put it in AI and it gave me this playbook that had like 15 different plays in it. And then I look at it, I'm like, wait a minute. And then I figured it out on my own. I was able to do it in one play. Like I was, I remember what it was. I wanted to remove all LibreOffice packages because I use the flat pack. So I wanted Ansible just to remove the distro packages. And there's going to be some dependencies and things like language packs and whatnot. And then what happened was it gave me a play for every single package that might possibly be installed. But all I had to do for the package name was type in double quotes, LibreOffice star. That was it. That one play took care of everything. And that's just yet another example. And I have like probably 12 more examples I'll spare you from. But the point is that AI is great, but we have to watch it. There has to be somebody that validates what we get back. Maybe someday in the future, it's going to be, you know, very reliable. And more often than not, you'll get back something good. But right now I'll use ChatGPT and then I'll use Claude AI to fact check it or to see if I get the same result or vice versa, because that's the world we live in today. And as things go to AI and people get laid off, they're going to regret that. It's not only horrible to lay people off, but to lay people off in favor of a premature technology. But bringing that back to our story, you know, AI is going to be more and more used for phishing and pretty much every other type of, breaking in that can be done. It's just, we really do have to be careful, not just with accepting AI, but also in regard to policies, making sure that we have the policies, we know that they're being followed, they're audited, they're checked, the companies that we're doing business with. In my days working for a managed service provider, there'd be like a bunch of questions. I'd have a company that is thinking about using the company that I work for, and they would have like 30 questions on this list, and you have to answer every single one of them. Like how do you protect data at rest? What is your policy for this? And you have to answer all of these. And a lot of administrators find this annoying, having to go through all these questions, but I loved it because I thought to myself, this company gets it. They want to use our services, but they want to check us out. They want to know that we're doing the right thing. They're asking a bunch of questions. They're talking to a bunch of people. And as time consuming as that is, that's the right way to do it. You have to know how they intend on handling certain situations. And, you know, that's very important. We really do need to ask those questions. Again, I'm not saying Clorox did or didn't ask these questions, but I think it's a cautionary tale. Actually, I think every story in today's podcast is a cautionary tale. And we just have to be diligent.
I actually, sometimes when looking at those at those forms that they give you to fill out. I'm answering those questions and I know 100% for sure the company that's asking me isn't doing half of the things that they're requiring me to do.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yes.
This type of attack, this isn't even something brilliant or very innovative or very new. SIM swapping or SIM cloning attacks, they rely on the hackers talking to the representative from your telecom company and getting them to make a clone of your SIM card. You tell them that you lost your phone or it fell down into the water or something like that, and you get the representative to clone the SIM card to a new one that you have. This has happened for years now. It's one of the reasons why two-factor authentication with SMS messages is just garbage today. Anybody can break into that. So yeah, this isn't something new, but unfortunately it's something that's being made easier and easier to accomplish. AI just makes it trivial to do. Again, outsourcing doesn't really mean that you're outsourcing the security responsibility, but often many companies just assume that it is. I'm outsourcing help desk to a different company, so that different company now has to handle all the concerns and has to take care of everything, and that doesn't happen.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're absolutely right. We really do have to know. And even in getting into the next story, even when you're doing your due diligence with your vendors, you have to make sure that you also have, you know, your policies local, because in this next story, I believe the company is KNP, 158 years old. I mean, this company has been around for a very long time, but one mistake was all it took for the entire company to be completely done. And that's what happened in our next story.
Yeah. And tying this from the previous one, when you're giving out employee passwords to the hackers, keep in mind that just a single compromised account, in this case through a password, can lead to total ruin. So KNP Transport Company, they're a trucking company from the UK, or used to be, and a single weak password led to the complete destruction of KNP. 700 people out of work, and this was done by the Akira ransomware gang. Nice name, by the way.
Yeah.
These guys gained access to the company systems by guessing an employee's password and then encrypted all of the company data. So, as you said, despite them having industry standard compliance and cyber insurance, they were unable to recover from the attack. It isn't the first time that we see something like this, where ransomware brings down the entire company and it shuts down. And it just happened again. So the hackers demanded £5 million, which is $6 or $7 million, and the company couldn't afford that, and they went out of business, which is unfortunate, but it's the real world consequence of ransomware attacks that you usually just consider them as an IT related problem.
Yeah, and it goes back to another thing we bring up a lot, is that security is only as secure as the weakest link. In this case, the ability to guess a password, I mean, presumably it must have been an easy password. And the thing is, that was all it took, like you said, like just getting into the system, it took that one weak account, that one weak password, and everyone is looking for a job just like that. And that's why I always tell everyone, you know, security is a responsibility for everybody. I don't care what your job title is. You might have a job title that has nothing to do with IT, like you're doing something else. Maybe you're in sales. I don't know what it is, but maybe you're working, you're part of the office staff. It doesn't matter. Whatever your job is, security is important, because any one person, if they make a mistake, that could affect everybody. And in the first story, over $350 million lost. In the second story, the company's out of business. So it's increasingly clear that the weakest link, you know, thing is very, very true. I mean, it just takes one. That's all it takes.
So the UK has been hit particularly hard by ransomware. Last year, it was over 19,000 ransomware incidents. Again, you need to compare the sizes of both countries. So comparing to the US, it might not be too much or more than the US, but it's still more than it used to be. The typical average ransom that's requested is around £4 million, which about a third of the companies are choosing to pay rather than fight against the ransomware gangs. many attacks don't go reported because the companies aren't required to disclose these incidents or the payments. And the thing is, the attacks are just becoming easier and easier to execute. Every single week we talk about this. It's easier and easier to create malware, to deploy malware, to get inside of the systems, as we just saw. And yeah, social engineering, like calling the IT help desk instead of looking for sophisticated attack vectors, it makes it even more easy. In this case, it was guessing a password. It doesn't really matter the how. It just shows that passwords are essentially insecure. It's just another evidence of that. We've been talking about passphrases recently. That's something that you should look into if you're just relying on passwords. Multi-factor authentication, at the very least, as long as it's not SMS or it's not something that you're storing right next to the password, because then it's no longer multi-factor. It's just the password it intercepts. But yeah, the hackers are having a field day with this. They're just making money left and right.
They really are. And we're at a time period where the only thing a threat actor needs when it comes to experience is just computing 101 skills, like not even to the sysadmin level. Like, they could literally just be somebody that has basic computer skills, or they know how to log into a system. And because again, you know, they'll call and get the password, or in this case, they're guessing the password. Very low expertise is required nowadays to bring a company to its knees. Now, don't get me wrong. A lot of threat actors out there, especially the more dangerous ones, they have a varied skill set, and they're part of a team that has a varied skill set. But again, weakest link, it just takes one password, and that is not that doesn't take much expertise. And that's the world we live in today.
And again, these guys were covering all of their bases. They had cyber insurance. They had taken the steps. They were complying with the security requirements of whatever. And it just isn't enough. All it takes is one mistake, one error, and that's enough for everything to come down. Interestingly, as they were talking with the person, I believe his name was Paul Abbott from KNP, or previously from KNP. He suggested, first, experts recommend against paying ransoms. That's just obvious, and we keep repeating that ourselves here on the podcast as well. You should never pay the ransom unless you absolutely found the cure for cancer and you have no backups. Other than that, you should never pay the ransom. One of the things, and this was an analogy that the person suggested, is that there should be something similar to an MOT test. An MOT, MOT is the Ministry of Transport in the UK. The MOT test is an annual inspection of vehicles over 3 years old, where you go and you have your car checked for braking problems or steering or suspension or whatever. They check the car and they give you a certificate if it's good enough to be on the road or not, or you have to take it and fix it. He suggested something like this, but for cybersecurity. Now, in principle, I really like the idea. In practice, I see no path forward to implementing this, because unlike cars, which have the basic components in every single car out there, no two infrastructures are alike. You have the infrastructure in company A, and it has nothing in common with the company next door. So I don't exactly know how something like this could be implemented. I love the analogy. I just don't see how it could be implemented.
Yeah, I don't either. And it's very easy to come up with solutions in your head, you know, as far as like, well, okay, if that were me, I would do X, Y, and Z differently so that it doesn't happen to me. And that's good. You should be thinking that way. But at the same time, you have to think about the things that you're not thinking about, because there's always another way in. You know, it's like the Jurassic Park of hackers. You know, hackers find a way. but it is that. And it really comes down to your disaster recovery and prevention plans. If you have something like this, and, you know, if you have a plan that you follow and rehearse, and you know, and you have, you know, offsite backups, or you have, you know, some kind of means of getting your data back, then something like this isn't going to be as bad. Obviously, someone gets into your system, as we talked before, that could take a very long time to get back up and running. I mean, that could take weeks, months to really go through your systems. But at the end of the day, it really does come down to your policies. If your systems were to be wiped out right now, and you had no servers, you had no data, you had nothing, how would you get that back? And I really do think that you need to be able to answer that question and have a good idea, you know, how to restore your backups. Your backups are versioned, they're offsite, they're in different locations. You know, you don't want to connect your backups, all the your backup servers to your existing servers all the time, because obviously if you're mounting a file share at the time that you get ransomware, well, guess what happens? They go right into the network share. They encrypt that stuff too. So you really do need to have these plans and rehearse them and know, and everyone that works on your team needs to know what their part is, you know, what they're responsible for, what's their piece of the puzzle that they will help out with when something like this happens, and really dial that down. I think that's really the biggest thing. Other than that, I mean, when it comes to predicting the bad things that could happen, there's always something we didn't think of. And again, it goes down to the disaster, you know, recovery plan, which is going to help you with those types of things. And, you know, nobody wants to be out of a job suddenly, especially not for a password that was guessed by someone from the outside.
Not directly as a result from this, but as a result of the increase in this type of incidents, the UK government is considering banning ransomware payments by public bodies and requiring private companies to get permission before paying those attackers. And I believe that's a really good step. And as a final step, as a final note here, before we move on to the next story, because this was impossible for me to ignore, Mr. Paul Abbott, the one that I've been quoting, says he hasn't told the employee that their compromised password was most likely the thing that led to the destruction of the company. And I quote, "Would you want to know if it was you?" And I have to say that that is a fine example of taking the high road in one of the worst possible situations. Having the ability to not be vindictive when he probably had good reason to, show some serious character. I very much respect that attitude.
I do too. It's common sometimes in these articles where they want to throw somebody under the bus, and the next thing you know, their name is everywhere for the wrong reasons. So yeah, I see that.
Now, moving on to things that sound really, really good on paper. Amazon acquires Bee. And the description for Bee starts like this. It's a startup that makes always-on wearable devices that record everything users say throughout their day. Now, this description of the product immediately makes me question the sanity of the person who came up with the idea and the fact that that person has never read Orwell's 1984.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the idea here is the Bee, it's like a band. And like you said, it listens to everything. And at first, it sounds like a good idea, but that doesn't last very long. Like, that's like the first 5 seconds of reading what it says, because, you know, for some people, it doesn't matter. But for me, it's like I have all these conversations and I'm talking to all these different people. Imagine being able to have a transcript of those conversations, and it can be like a journal. You know, last Tuesday, I talked to Fred about something or whatever it is. But that quickly goes away because, as the article brings up, I mean, there's several examples of why this is a bad idea. We'll get to that shortly. But now the company is owned by Amazon. So, you know, the company itself, Bee, you know, everyone says they take security and privacy, you know, seriously. And Amazon is saying that too after they acquire this. But then the question is, you know, is Amazon going to have the same policies? But let's talk about the problems. And there's so many. And I'm not even going to be able to get to all of them. But, you know, one of which being, you know, you're talking to a friend, and now that entire conversation is being recorded. Your friend may not know this. Your friend may not have agreed to be recorded. You're literally walking around with a device that's going to record conversations. And that's a privacy violation before we even get to the systems. If somebody doesn't want to be recorded and they are, that's a problem. And that's before we get to how does Bee handle privacy and how is Amazon's ownership going to deal with this? And, you know, of course, we can think of with Amazon, does that mean I'm going to talk to somebody about, you know, I need to buy new windows or something for the house? And next thing I know, I have a like 10 emails in my inbox from window providers because the device heard me mention Windows or something. I mean, there's a lot to unpack here.
So it's like people don't watch the news even. I mean, the same thing and the same backlash happened with Google's glasses. The same problem happened when Humane AI Spin was announced. The $499 spin that you would wear that had an AI assistant supposedly embedded and was always recording. Same issue. The special thing with this one is that this is less than $50. This is $49.99 with the $19 subscription. If you're wondering how they're able to create this type of memories, this type of digital memories, which is how they market this, it's because, yes, they're always listening, and yes, it's always recording, allegedly. Now, the part about there are so many things wrong with this. The part about privacy, and this is crazy. When you purchased the device before the acquisition, you accepted the, for sure, terms of service from B, you accepted the end user license agreement from B, and now the company is sold to Amazon. Amazon already has privacy policies in terms of services and end user license agreements. There's absolutely zero guarantees that they're going to uphold the ones that B had agreed with you. So your data essentially, even retroactively, now belongs to Amazon. And that's a problem. It's so crazy how people don't see this. This is exactly the same issue with 23andMe that we discussed a few episodes back, the DNA mapping company. When they're selling the company to somebody else, that new company is under no obligation of fulfilling the agreements that 23andMe had. This is the same problem here. How are you now going to force Amazon to comply with the agreement that you made with B? They bought the company, they have access to the data. Who cares about it? It's Amazon. You're going to fight Amazon now? Good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck with that. And another point about this too, and you know, I'm not able to tell the future, obviously, but you know, it's one thing if Amazon did the right thing and has the right policies and is above the board. But the way that acquisitions usually go, and I see this time and time again, it'll usually be something along the lines of the company that's being acquired says, you know, we're still Acme. We're always going to be Acme. We just have a new ownership, and the new overlord is going to give us more capabilities to empower our company to do even more than we were doing. And we're still going to be the same. And then, you know, 2 years later, the name goes away and now it's the Echo Listen or the Amazon Echo Listen. And then there's no B branding anymore. And then once the branding goes away and then the company is completely dissolved into Amazon, again, not saying that's going to happen, but it often does. Now B doesn't exist, but their technology still exists under, you know, with an Amazon logo now. And now they could just do whatever they want because now they fully own everything. So it's kind of like the, you know, we talk about constantly the encryption backdoors, and while they're a very bad thing, you know, there's no way to have a backdoor and encryption and not have it weaken, you know, severely the encryption. And when it comes to AI or devices like this, I think it becomes impossible to have certain benefits from technology without an inherent risk of something bad happening. Because even if a company does everything perfect, they have all the right policies, you know, all it takes is a threat actor to break in and listen in on something that somebody has. And are you going to know that there's a few more CPU cycles in your wristband being used as you're walking around? I mean, are you really going to notice that? And the next thing you know, there's people eavesdropping that you don't even know are eavesdropping. It becomes increasingly hard, in my opinion, to fully leverage AI. I mean, you had Windows Recall, actually, you have Windows Recall, which sounds really great. You could get like screenshots of everything you're working on. What was I doing last Tuesday? Oh, let me go through the screenshots and see what I was working on, which sounds like a great thing. But that now that information can leak out. Now somebody can get a hold of it. Someone breaks into your computer and I don't know, maybe you're working on your bank account with your bank number showing there in clear text. And now there's a screenshot, it gets stolen. I do feel at a certain point, it's impossible not to have downsides with AI. Just like we can only have downsides with encryption backdoors.
And just like with Recall, the issue is that you don't even have to own one. You just need to talk with somebody that does. If I send you an email and you have Recall activated, I know you don't use Microsoft, but if you have Recall activated and I send you a private email, I have confidential information I share with you. I never installed Recall. I never accepted Microsoft's terms of service, but now my confidential information is stored and accessible to Microsoft. That's a problem. Normalizing always on recording devices, that's a really dangerous slippery slope that we're going through. This type of surveillance, this is exceedingly dangerous, and this isn't just tinfoil hat conspiracy stuff. Agreeing to this type of things means that you're losing control of your information, you're losing control of your data, and you're accepting that willingly, and that's a problem. And now you should start doing this. When you talk to somebody, you're going to have to look at their wrists to see if they're wearing a wearable like this. Is that activated? Is that always recording? Come back to me when you turn it off, or just leave it inside that locker over there, and then we can talk. And this is ridiculously dangerous. This is Orwellian in the extreme. This is exactly the type of surveillance mechanism that you see on dystopian novels. This is ridiculous to even go down and through this path. This is so dangerous in so many ways that companies trying to come out with services and products that do exactly this, it boggles the mind to no end.
And tech companies are going to be tech companies, and we all know how it is. You know, they'll say, oh, it's opt-in, or, you know, there's settings or whatever. We know how that goes. Just like Windows Recall is opt-in. We know how that goes. I mean, this is the same company that released a Windows 10 update and says, do you want to install it? Yes or no. And both yes and no answer yes, and then it installs it. And these companies will give you alerts and notifications, enable advanced features. You go to a website to read a blog. It tries to get you to agree to receive notifications from the website. And obviously, the audience of this show, we know better, right? We all know this. But the average person just says yes to every single box that comes up on their computer. So it doesn't even matter if something is off by default. But now, bringing it back to this, you know, who's to say that they're a device like this, you get a, maybe on your computer when you sync it up, if that's how it works or something like that, you get a notification that says, new advanced features, exciting advanced features, click yes to enable features. And most people are going to say, yes, I want those, you know, features for my device, without really knowing what they're doing. And next thing you know, I mean, it's so easy for a company to sidestep privacy, because all they have to do is just show a message on the screen and ask people to say yes, and they probably will. And the Security Now podcast, a podcast I really like, they call that the tyranny of the default. You know, basically the defaults are bad, and then we get these notifications left and right. So there's all kinds of bad things that can happen. And also, from the article, it says that in Germany, it's illegal to wear one of these. And unless it's clearly visible, so, you know, Germany is obviously concerned about this, as am I. So it's just, yeah.
You mean governments are concerned about concealed listening devices? Well, they very much should. They represent the people. They very much should be concerned about people using undercover recording devices. That's not how you operate in society. That should never be normalized.
Yeah, I almost started clapping when I read that part of the article.
Yeah, this is just Amazon continuing the same strategy and the same trajectory that they started with Alexa. They want to be able to listen to whatever you're doing. Alexa was supposed to just be in the house so they could listen to what your conversations inside the house. By the way, Alexa is always listening. That's how it can do what it does. But they understood that it wasn't enough, because you spend a lot of time outside of the house. Normal people do. I don't mean geeks, but normal people supposedly go outside, do something, for whatever reason. And they saw that they weren't listening when people were outside the house. So having a wearable that follows people around, that just filled the information gap for them. So after you wear something like this, don't be surprised that if the things that you were discussing, and you mentioned Windows, the things that you've been discussing throughout the day pop up in your suggestion list when you go to Amazon to shop for these different products. And that's exactly the strategy here. That's exactly what they're going to do with this information. Keeping up with any privacy requirements that you as a big customer made prior to the acquisition, you should have absolutely zero expectation that that's going to be upheld.
And speaking of expectations, a lot of people don't trust Amazon. Now, obviously, you know, not enough people to tank the company or anything like that, but you know, they're trying to be everywhere, and I do mean everywhere. I don't use Facebook much, if at all, anymore, and I'm not suggesting anyone else use it either, but back when I was using it, I was scrolling through my timeline, and they inserted an ad for Amazon Pharmacy. Like, the Amazon wants to deliver your medications now. And this is not new. This happened a while back. But what I decided to do was check the comments, because it's like, okay, this is going to be fun. I'm going to check the comments underneath this ad. And sure enough, it was just pages upon pages of people like, why would we trust you with our prescriptions? If you ever just so happen to get that ad, if you just so happen to be a Facebook user, again, do not sign up for Facebook unless you absolutely want to. But if that comes up, check the comments. It's hilarious. And now they want to listen in to everything that you're saying. So first they want to, you know, handle your blood pressure medications. And now they want to know what you're talking about when you get together with your friends.
And those are the stories that we have for today. Foreshadowing a bit of the next episode, we're going to be talking about trains, and we're going to be talking about AI agents completely wrecking companies, like just every other day. Thank you, everybody who joined. As always, it was a pleasure, and until the next one.
Thanks again.